This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What's trending?
What's trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. By the way, congrats to Baker University. Their men's basketball team won a conference regular season crown last night, I believe, against Benedictine as well. But number one on what's trending, breaking news in the NBA. Victor Wembanyama expected to miss the remainder of the season, according to Yahoo Sports and others now, with a deep vein thrombosis in his right shoulder. In other words, a blood clot. Very serious thing for Victor Wembanyama. So he's done for the season. Huge impact in a lot of different betting markets and a lot of different, you know, approaches to the rest of the season in the NBA and how the Spurs handle things and what that means for them. But we're talking about one of the biggest stars in the league, done for the year.
Welcome to the lottery, San Antonio Spurs. Yeah. Welcome to potentially the top 10, maybe even the top 5, depending on how bad they tank here for the rest of the season. I don't think they're going to be in contention for the number one overall pick. I think the Jazz and Pelicans and Wizards are going to have something to say about that. But yeah, this is a tough one, and I hate to be the one to say it, but you just hope that this is not a sign of things to come, right? I mean, you never want to see this happen, but we see it happen occasionally with players of his size and his stature. You know, injuries or things of that nature become a factor in their life in the game of basketball, right? I always point back to guys like Greg Oden, who was this absolutely astonishing prospect, right? He's the guy that went number one ahead of Kevin Durant. Sam Bowie was another one in that draft where Elijah Wan goes 1-84. He goes number two out of Kentucky. And then you've got Michael Jordan sitting at three. Victor Wembanyama is as good a prospect or talent to enter the NBA that many of us have ever seen. I mean, I watched that Paris game that they had against the Indiana Pacers. I made my wife sit down and watch it with me. And she was mesmerized by the way this man played basketball. At 7'4", he handles like a guard. You know, that shot block he had against Chet Holmgren a couple of weeks ago where he was literally standing, like he didn't jump, and got up 10 plus feet and blocked Chet Holmgren's shot at 7'1". He's an alien, and hence the reason for the nickname and why the deals that have come his way. I want to see him have a long and healthy career in the NBA. I just hope that this isn't a sign of things to potentially come in his career where he's constantly dealing with these injuries and health concerns because of his size at 7'4".
Next up on what's trending.
Ooh. Oh man, what is trending right now?
How about those Missouri Tigers, right? Another top 5 win last night in Columbia over Alabama. We're going to talk more about this game, including how Dennis Gates handled the final minute or final seconds, I should say, really, of the game with the PA announcement, and then something happened in the press conference. So we'll get back to that. Missouri's got 3 top 5 wins now on the season. They're up to 13th, I think, or 12th in KenPom. So the Missouri Tigers, they could end up being a top 3, top 4 seed come March Madness.
They can score with anybody. The defense is going to be the question. I mean, giving up 90. I know Alabama's a solid offensive team, But they have a tendency to give up big, big chunks of points. They've given up 90 multiple times. They've given up 80 a handful of times as well. Offense is great, but the adage is that defense wins championships, and college basketball has kind of proven that over the course of the years, that offense will allow you to stay in a game, but defense is what allows you to win big games come March and April, for sure.
Next on What's Trending, Diana Rossini was on the Rich Eisen show, and she said Travis Kelce, that is, of course, is leaning towards coming back for 2025. We'll play you a little bit of that. We'll get back to this topic later on in the show, too. But here's what she said.
You know, I can tell you from just having a few conversations with people around the league over the last few days, there's definitely a sense that Travis is going to try to play more. I haven't heard anyone say, yeah, he's really struggling with what he wants to do. It's definitely leaning more towards that. That can, of course, change. This is going to be his decision only. But for this Chiefs operation looking to move forward here, I think they feel pretty good that Travis has got a little bit more left in him.
If you're a Chiefs fan, maybe you feel a little bit better, even after hearing that audio about Travis Kelce's chances of coming back in 2025 and what would, I think, assuredly be his final season, even if they were to rework the contract a little bit. Elsewhere in What's Trending, soccer last night. I mean, one of the coldest games between MLS teams. I know it wasn't a MLS game. It was the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but still one of the coldest games out there. Props, I guess, to those of you that...
There's more than I thought there were out
the
there.
Elements. Yeah, I watched it on TV. I think there were some people that stayed for the first half, and then they were out.
As soon as I saw Messi score, I was like, dang it, I should have gone.
Yeah, that
I
was a lone goal. Sporting KC lost the first leg of this CONCACAF Champions Cup opening round, 1-0 to Inter Miami, and yeah, the folks got what they paid for, right? They wanted to see Messi. See what Messi, and that was a great goal from Messi, the lone goal in the match.
Yeah, memories that will last a lifetime. I just hope that your toes and fingers lasted throughout the course of that match as well.
I couldn't help but notice. So, like, the players, of course, had gloves and like, you know, long sleeve and stuff. They also had, like, one of those neck guard things. None of them had anything over their ears or face. And I'm like, was that not allowed? Because, like, we heard stories at the Chiefs game, and I understand at what they 45 minutes they were able to go in the locker room or whatever. But still, I'm thinking, how are they handling this? The frostbite? Doesn't it only take, like, 20 minutes under when it's negative something wind chill?
I don't know if it's not allowed, but I have never seen a soccer player wear anything over their
they
ears.
They can't wear one of those, what do they call, baklava, right? Baklava mask? I think that's what they call
those. I've never seen
like
the shiesties, I think is another phrase for them.
Look like Kadarius Toney out there, yeah.
I don't know. I was like, man, props to the players as well that played. That was just, what a miserable game to play in and be at.
I'm sorry. I'm not the biggest soccer fan on the planet, but even if that was a football game, you'd have to pay me to go.
Oh,
I'm a cold weather guy, but that is too damn cold.
I said I would have needed to be in a suite last night to go. I would have needed to be in a suite with heat.
I need my own personal space heater. That's what I need.
Next on What's Trending, USA versus Canada tonight. Hockey in Boston. Earlier in the week, I mentioned I think the NHL has hit a home run here with the Four Nations face-off thing they've been doing to get entry. Casual fans like myself, I am not a hockey fan, but I was glued to the TV a couple nights ago, and I can't wait to watch tonight. USA versus Canada in Boston. The crowd, I want to see what the crowd's like because tickets, the cheapest tickets are going for $1,100 tonight in Boston. We all know the story, right? Canadian fans were booing the U.S. national anthem, all of that. Like, I just want to see the whole theater of the thing. How do we have a fight early on the match again? We had three fights in the first 9 seconds of the match the other day, so I can't wait to see how that plays out.
This is what the NBA should be doing, right? If you're Adam Silver, you're the commissioner of the NBA, and you're asking, what do we need to do to increase the popularity of the All-Star Weekend? Because the three-point contest and the dunk contest, those just are what they are. But in terms of the All-Star game itself, I like the approach of the four-team format and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Similar, but the fact that it's, you know, it's nation against nation in that sense, and you can't really do that in the NBA because it is such a wildly international sport now. But if you could do like a USA versus the world, like they used to do with like the Rising Stars Showcase, I think that that would generate a massive amount of popularity towards the NBA All-Star game again.
Yeah, I mean, look, NHL, that was the first full hockey game of the year that I watched, was what we just saw a couple nights ago in Montreal. And then tonight, yeah, I'm pumped for it, man. And, I don't know. I think I was reading up on it because I don't claim to be a hockey expert by any means. And I guess Canada maybe is getting like one of their better players back or something tonight. So I don't know if that bodes well for USA. But hopefully Boston is nuts tonight. You know that crowd's going to let the Canadians hear it tonight, too. So it's going to be pretty wild to see. Maybe we'll talk more about that later on in the show. Reminder here, in about 30 minutes, we'll head out to warm Surprise, Arizona, and check in with Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, how things are looking on another day there in spring training. He, of course, has his hot stove show tonight as well. Chris Bubich, one of the guests, also Annie Rogers, some of the guests tonight for his hot stove show. But we mentioned in what's trending there, the Missouri Tigers, another top five win. They've got three of them on the season. This one was so impressive. I understand that Florida win was on the road in Gainesville in that atmosphere. In a weird way, I think last night was more impressive. I think Alabama's better than Florida, number one. And also, you put up over 100 points in that game. The efficiency of that offense, that beats anybody in the country. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to play like that every night, but that offense shows you why they can beat anybody and why you should be fired up if you're a Missouri Tigers fan, finally having a team that's capable of going on a run. And that's where the expectation, I think, has to change. You know, the 08-09 team went to an Elite Eight and lost. I do not think it's crazy to have that kind of expectation for this team now. They didn't win a conference game a year ago, and so you come into this year probably as a Tigers fan saying, just get to the tournament, please. Just get to the tournament. We're way past that now. This is a team that might be a number three or four seed if they keep trending in this direction. I mean, they are probably going to go from, what, 15th ranked from the AP poll standpoint, at least, which doesn't mean a whole lot, up to 10, up to 11 after another top five win, depending on how things shake out this weekend. So if you're a three or four seed, getting out of the first weekend is 100% the expectation.
Without question. And, you know, and that's hard, I know, for Mizzou fans, because the last time you were in a position such as this, I'm sorry to be the one to say, you know, Norfolk State happened. And I know PTSD, you know, a lot of Mizzou fans just duck and covered behind their radio dials. And there's a fear that resides in that if you're a fan of the Missouri Tigers. But this team is so balanced. They can score inside. They can score outside. They've got, you know, they've got any number of guys. They got eight or nine guys that could give you double figures on a particular night. When you have a guy like Caleb Grill coming off the bench, scoring the way he scores, I mean, inside, outside, the three-point shooting that he's got, it's pretty impressive stuff. And when Mark Mitchell is playing it the way that he played last night, I think the concern if you're Mizzou is if you have a poor shooting night, because those are going to happen. And if your defense is questionable in a sense and you have a poor shooting night, that's not a lot to contend with. And that is going to be an interesting question for this team. You know, Mark Mitchell is not the greatest rebounder on the planet. So if you don't shoot the ball well and you get dominated on the glass, you could be in for a rough night. And yes, what they're doing in the SEC kind of gives you a little bit of a snapshot into what they might be able to do in March, because it is the best basketball conference in America.
13 teams in the NCAA tournament or something like that.
It is unquestioned the best team, best conference in college basketball this year. When you come out in March and you've got to play a team out of the Big 12 or a team out of the Big 10 that, you know, they weren't playing in your league. They may not be as talented, but they have a different style of play. Maybe they're a more, you know, interior-minded scoring team and defending team. It's going to be hard for you to get to the rim. Maybe they're an excellent three-point defending team. You're going to have to find an approach. And the one thing about the game of basketball that will always translate is your effort defensively. Always.
Yeah, I think as somebody pointed out too, like if you're looking for what could be the problem in the tournament or whatever for a team that's playing great, you know, you always talk about the free throw percentage and is that good enough in crucial spots and things like that. But right now, offensive output that they're able to put out can beat anybody. I was looking at the latest odds, if you're just curious, like to even have this discussion is pretty nuts. Missouri right now has the, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th best odds to win the national title right
now.
Wow. If I would have told you that in November, you would have been like, you're like, what are you? You would call me crazy. It's still 30-1, right? It's still a quote unquote long shot, but they have the 9th best odds to win the national title. They are just behind Arizona and Tennessee. Now, Iowa State is ahead of them and it's half the odds, basically. It's 17-1, But Missouri has better odds than Drew, your Wisconsin Badgers, who are 35-1. Texas Tech 35-1. Michigan 40-1. A&M, Texas A&M 40-1. That's the realm they're in as far as betting markets. Doesn't mean that there's any guarantees that the favorite Auburn, who clearly I think is the best team in college basketball, is plus 330. Auburn absolutely is the best team right now. But Missouri, like, they got a shot. I'm not saying they're like going to a Final Four or guarantee or anything like that, but
there's no guarantees in college basketball.
It's the NCAA tournament, right?
Yeah, there's no guarantees.
You just have a bad night, or you run into what's his name? I keep forgetting his name already, from Oakland like last year. Kentucky did. Golkey. You run into a guy like Golkey that you can't miss. Who knows what can happen? I mean,
Ali Farouk Manouche.
KU ran into that. Missouri, Norfolk State.
Don't want to hear that name again.
But that's why I bring up the 08-09. Like, if you're a Missouri Tigers fan, because there has been other circumstances where you thought you were going to go on a run and you lost to Norfolk State. I mean, that happens. But 08-09, that team went to the Elite Eight. So that's what I think. That's your level of team that you think maybe you have.
Well, and this isn't to continue, you know, poo-pooing on your on the KU is bad party. I guess that Carrington is just trying to run through more than its course but. Missouri, you know, we talked about KU. They get Zeke Mayo. They get AJ Storey. You're going after top 25, top 50 guys in the portal. I looked. Missouri is hitting number 126 in the portal. They're hitting 102 in the portal. They're hitting 55 in the portal. With my guy Tony Perkins, who's from my hometown of Indy, went to my rival high school. You find guys that fit what you need right away. You know, Logan, I think you mentioned it as well, like the freshmen that he recruited aren't even getting as much playing time, which goes to show you how effective everybody who Dennis Gates has brought in has been. But you recruit that four-star talent, and then you build around them. And then if you happen to have guys that are just overtaking those freshmen and they can sit and continue to learn, and then you have them again for another year, then great. But finding what you need and hitting those needs rather than just saying, okay, he's number one in the portal, he's number two in the portal, he's number 15 in the portal. Like, I remember, like, before the season started, I think during the Midnight Madness or whatever, Bill Self himself said, yeah, we got a pretty good roster update. Yeah, it looks great. It looks great on paper when you get a guy that averages 20 a game, 15 a game, 18 a game, but if they can't all put it together in your system the way that you have things set up, then... and there's too many egos, it doesn't mesh well. Where Dennis Gates has found a way to find the guys that mesh what he does well, and they obviously have been fantastic this season.
Fantastic, right, Drew?
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Nate Oates, the head coach of Alabama, was speaking to the media after the game. Take a listen.
You know, they perfect in press conference over, I guess, right? Somebody pulled the fire alarm. Is that what we got going?
Please. Your attention, please. A fire has been reported in the building. Please proceed.
Yeah, they were on fire tonight. That's for sure what was going on. We've known that for about 2 hours.
A little humor there from the Alabama head coach, Nate Oates. We've all been in a spot like that before where all of a sudden the intercom kicks on for something like that. I don't know if we've had the fire alarm going off in the studio before. I feel like we have, but I don't know if ours has like the whole intercom announcement deal that some of the bigger facilities or whatever has. But
you say that now.
Yeah, you just spoke that into existence.
I don't know if we have the intercom thing is all I'm saying, but Missouri was on fire though, 110 points. Yeah. They gave up 98. I'm sure they won't like that aspect
of it.
They
were nuts.
But and Alabama was making shots too, but 110 points, that offensive efficiency will give you a shot every single time. All right, I want to talk about something that I know everybody gets annoyed with, because whether we're talking about Royals TV stuff, whether we're talking about Christmas Day Netflix games, and that, of course, is where things are going streaming. Bad news for you. The latest update is that Netflix is not just trying to have these Christmas Day games. Nope. They're trying to get one of those afternoon packages on Sunday from Fox or CBS. Now, it's not going to happen this year necessarily, but it's on the way. There's been a couple reports about this, that Sunday afternoon games, of course, have been CBS and Fox. Fox acquired the NFC package. Remember when each network had their own conference? Now, AFC games can be on Fox as well. But you guys remember at the time, CBS bought the AFC package and Fox had the NFC package. The current deal goes through 2033. But the NFL can say, hey, we think we have a better deal. They can pull the plug 4 years earlier. why wouldn't they? The dollar amount's only going to go up. So basically in 2029, these deals actually end up, not 2033. And the latest is that Netflix wants to become an even bigger player in the NFL, not just these Christmas Day games. And so do not be surprised. We're still 4 or 5 years away, but all of a sudden, a Sunday 3:25 kickoff, it might also be on Netflix. The way the NFL operates, if it was a Chiefs game or whatever, then you could still get it locally without having to have Netflix, just like you guys did that for Christmas Day, and we all did that for Christmas Day. But this is where it's trending, and this is like, I understand, like, we get mad about Major League Baseball and how a lot of the stuff is streaming and all that. The NFL is taking slower to get there, and their inventory is way less and all that. But this is where this thing is going, man. We're gonna have more and more games. Thursday night's already on Amazon. Christmas is on Netflix. Black Friday game is on Prime as well. This is a different territory when you get to just your regular Sunday afternoon game. But you could have one game on Netflix every Sunday afternoon in the future.
No question. Listen, for those who are standing firm with their cords and their, you know, satellite dishes and whatever else, I applaud you. I applaud you taking a stand. You're fighting a losing battle. It's over. This is where it's going. Everybody's known that for years. This is just another example of it. Like it or not, right? I'll give Netflix a little bit of credit because the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight, which I absolutely did not watch because I knew it was going to be a train wreck.
I couldn't watch.
Exactly. It was a nightmare. And they corrected that a little bit. It was better during the Christmas Day games. There weren't really many issues, at least on my end, with my experience with that Chiefs-Steelers game. This is where it's headed. This is where it's been headed for several years. We've all known it. I think that there's good and there's bad to it. It's where the money is, right? It's an adapt or die industry, and they understand that streaming is replacing cable and satellite in almost every other aspect of life. I mean, my parents are in their, you know, late 40s and 50s, and they've had Hulu Live TV for 5 years. I mean, they had DirecTV for years and years. They cut the cord and cut the satellite dish, and they've been using streaming for everything they have. So a lot of people are already streaming games. Even if you are watching it on CBS, maybe you're watching it on YouTube TV or Hulu Live TV or Tubi or whatever platform you're already using. This is just another thing, and most people have Netflix to begin with. So for me,
Netflix needs a sports man because their actual content kind of stinks right now.
It's not great.
And every 3 months they're raising the rate on Netflix.
Yeah. They're getting bullied by Amazon Prime and Hulu and Apple. Yeah. They're not doing a great job. And it's not like it's this random obscure sort of like Drew. I heard that you're a Wisconsin fan. I've now found out that you're a Wisconsin
and
fan.
And a Butler fan.
So
I went
to K-State fan.
Okay. I went to Butler. I have watched not one Butler basketball game this year. I've watched only Wisconsin. So
Is Butler terrible this year? Is that why? Are they any good?
They've been bad for a long time, ever since they went to the Big East, to be honest with you. But I don't even watch my alma mater play. I watch
That's
Wisconsin
sad.
Play.
That's sad.
I'm a Wisconsin guy through and through.
I'm not sure how Drew and I can be friends.
Yeah, Mr.
He's a Wisconsin guy and a Bengals fan, and I am an Iowa fan and
Chiefs
tough, fan.
You know? It's tough.
It's
a strange one. Like, the only thing that would be worse,
City streets, I guess.
The only thing worse would be if you were a Nebraska fan and a Bengals fan.
Then
it would
Spector.
Be over.
Yeah, that's the boss. That's the boss.
Speck's a Nebraska fan?
Oh, yeah.
His fandom is all.
We're fighting.
No, hold on. I need to call Speck out.
No,
sorry,
boy, here
Speck.
We go.
Hold on. Logan, he went to Syracuse, but he cheers for Duke basketball. That is insane to me.
He does. This is true.
You went to Syracuse in the Boeheim era and you cheer for Duke?
For the life of me, I don't understand why Speck went to Syracuse. He went to Syracuse, but he cheers for Duke. I don't know how that's possible.
That's wild. You went to a basketball school, but don't like the basketball at that school. Hey, man, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a fascinating subject. But like, as I mentioned, that Drew is a Wisconsin fan. I'm sure you've watched Wisconsin games on Peacock. It's bizarre
to me that it's all on
Peacock nowadays. It could be worse, right? We're not getting NFL games on Peacock
yet. A lot of people have the services, but I think it's not the fact that they're on different services.
At least Netflix, people do already have. But yeah.
It's that if I want to watch the game on Netflix, I have to transition to a new app, and I can't just scroll to find the next game, or I can't multi-view it. I have to go to a new app to watch the game, right, and it's exclusive just to their way. Or if the game stinks, I have to go back to, you're not able to go back and forth on commercials or anything.
You're
like
describing
that.
Cable, you know, where you can yeah, flip channel to, yes, channel. No, I think that's an annoyance for a lot of people. Someone on the text line, 913-586-7965, Jay Southland, tow service text line from the 913, says, hey, how is this a bad thing? It's just another regular game we get on Sunday afternoons without needing Sunday Ticket or some illegal streaming site. As long as we still get one game on CBS and Fox now, we get a guaranteed third game. That's a positive. But here's the thing. I don't know if that's what it would be. Like, I hear what you're saying, which is right now, you know, you guaranteed, you sometimes, depending on the schedule, you at least get one on CBS, one on Fox. You sometimes don't get both, remember, though. So I wonder, depending on what market are you in, will there ever be a Sunday afternoon in 2029 where, if you're not in a certain market, the national game, instead of it being Fox, like the national America's game or whatever, is the Netflix one, and then only the local market gets the random, you know, Tennessee Jacksonville game or something like that, like bad game anyway. But point being, I hear what you're saying. I don't take it as that there would be a CBS, a Fox, and then a Netflix that you could access all three. If that's the case, then you're right.
Great,
then you get an opportunity to watch all three. My guess is with the rights that Netflix would be paying for, you would have the TV market, depending on when the Chiefs play or whatever, you may only get one game, and that game that week might only be Netflix. But if it's all three, then yeah, who cares? You're right. Then it ends up being all right. Alex Gold, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon with you here on Cody and Gold. Up next, I want to get back into what Jeff Schwartz had to say. One concern around the offensive line and how people are discussing someone they just drafted a year ago. And then we'll head out to Arizona and talk with our guy, Josh Vernier, about the Royals.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll start to spring training. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Logan Weber filling in for Cody. Cody will be back tomorrow. Drew Nixon producing the show. We'll check in with Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, here in about 10 minutes or so. He's got his hot stove show tonight. First one. Get us going. Leading up every Thursday until opening day, Vern's hot stove show. And then, Logan, you'll be on after hours tonight.
Correct.
I wonder what you'll talk about tonight.
Yeah.
From 7 to 9.
Probably the same things that we've talked about for the past 4 hours.
we will get back into the stadium stuff coming up in the 1 o'clock hour today. Both John Sherman's comments and the report from 95.7 FM today in regards to the Chiefs and maybe what they're doing in Kansas or not doing in Kansas. So that'll come back up in just a bit. But I do want to talk about the offseason for the Chiefs. But before that, you guys should have called me out for something I said. The text line was all over it. You guys, you didn't call me out. I was talking about the Sporting KC game last night.
Yeah.
And I said, how come they don't wear like the mask? And I said, why don't they wear those like full face mask things? And I said, you know, those baklava mask. And you guys didn't call me out.
I'll be honest.
I'm talking about the was it the balaclava mask? You know what I'm talking about. You guys know what I'm talking
close
about?
Close enough, yeah.
You guys just let me slide with that? The text line was all over it. I was waiting for one of you to mention the baklava. Nobody... Someone says, dude, that's a dessert, man. The balaclava mask things. Yeah, those.
I know the dessert, but for all we know, there's also a mask that is called that as well.
You know,
I don't know.
You would know the mask that I'm talking about. I think it's like it's like
balaclava mask is what it's called. Everybody I've ever heard has always called it a shiesty. That's what I've always heard it referred to as. But listen,
I was waiting. The text line was all over, and I was waiting for one of you to bring it up.
Alex, do I look wealthy enough to be just ordering baklava on a regular basis, man? Come on.
Have you ever had baklava?
I don't think I have.
I don't think so.
I have not either.
Cody's going to text in and be like, I've made it five times. We'll talk to him about tomorrow, maybe on the show. But yeah, shout out to you on the text line that caught that. I appreciate you holding me accountable for that. But yes, not baklava. Anyway, let's talk about this offensive line. I thought it was interesting what Jeff Schwartz, of course, the brother of former Chiefs offensive lineman Mitchell Schwartz, and of course, Jeff played in the league as well. But Jeff Schwartz was on just his own social media account yesterday, and he brought up one thing about the O-line conversation that I think fans are ready to do something that maybe the organization isn't, and that is how we view Kingsley Suamataia, the Chiefs' second-round pick a year ago.
The other idea that I've seen around is just draft another offensive lineman at 31. Whew, buddy, you have other holes on the roster, right? I'll mention them again, right? So the pass rush was horrendous against the Eagles. Now, their offensive line is really good. We get that. They stopped the runner really well, but you need someone to rush the passer. This is a great defensive tackle class. So follow that away for a second. Your middle linebacker most likely going to walk. I don't think the Chiefs are going to play Bolton. I'm not sure they're going to pay Reed, but you have Hicks and you have Cook. Like, maybe that's a solution right there. You know, you probably want one more veteran wideout, especially with Rice being suspended at some point next season. But Rice and Worthy look like a good combination. You need more, though, right? You know, running back, it's a good draft for a back. I think they're going to draft a back, but you need explosive back, maybe another tight end. Like, there's other holes. You need kind of roster guys for your offensive line. There's other holes that they have to fill besides left tackle. And it's not a tackle class that's great. And so you're just drafting a project in Kingsley who hasn't even played yet. And now you want to draft another project at 31 but you haven't even tried the other guy yet. Like, unless the Chiefs decide Kingsley is the worst offensive lineman they've ever drafted and he is not going to play. Eric Fisher, guys, was not good as a rookie. Not good in his second year, maybe by his third year. Like, they eventually got him good. Like, you need reps, but the reps last year, again, were limited because the Chiefs' goal was trying to win a championship.
I thought that was interesting from Jeff Schwartz because he played in the league. He obviously, and he has that perspective on the position. I think he's 100% right on the fact that this past year, was different than most teams because if you were in Tennessee, I keep using them today because they're just a bad organization, bad football team right now. You can have rookies playing and deal with the struggles. You're not protecting a franchise quarterback, all of that. You can just get experience. That wasn't what this year was about. So Kingsley did only play two games. I think a lot of Chiefs fans probably think he's like the worst pick ever. He was mentioning that. I think he's going to be a guard for this team and end up contributing over the next couple of years. I don't think they're just writing him off. I'll be honest, though. I don't think they can go into next season with him as the left tackle, though. But I don't think there's a long-term fix maybe available at left tackle either, because he's 100% right on the 31st pick. That's why we had Bink on yesterday briefly talking about the mock draft and everything. I don't believe you can draft a tackle at 31 because he's right. You'd be in the same spot. It'd be another project unless you're trading all the way up. You know, you're giving up multiple draft assets, get into the top 15 to go get one of the surefire guys. You're going to have major question marks if you draft another tackle. So it is either roll with what you have in-house / DJ Humphries at left tackle. You got to bring him back on a deal. Or do they go take one of the risky, injury-prone veteran left tackles that are out there as well? Ronnie Stanley is who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there is just go draft your next 5-year starter left tackle. I don't believe that's in the cards unless they're trading way up, man.
Oh, no question. I agree with Jeff a little bit in the sense that, like, we didn't get to see a lot of Kingsley Suamataia. And in the games we did, he had tough matchups, right? I mean, he started games against the Ravens and the Broncos, which have really good defensive line units. The Broncos led the NFL in sacks this past year. And then he started a game against the Panthers. But he did play some guard this year, and he played guard fairly well in the limited snaps that we saw from him. I think he fits that right guard spot a little bit better. I think it would be more of a seamless, or maybe not seamless, but a more seamless transition to take a guy like Kingsley Suamataia and put him at right guard rather than somebody you have to bring in via the draft or whatever else. Although I do think guard is a little bit easier to draft than tackle is generally. I wouldn't be disappointed to see Kingsley get an opportunity. He'll have a full offseason at his disposal. And I do agree that you don't take a tackle at 31 because it's a game of liar's dice. You never really know in that sense. If you want a good tackle, you got to move up into the top 10 or 12 or 15. And I just don't think the Chiefs are capable of that. They do not have the draft capital at their disposal. You only got 6 picks in this draft, and you need those 6 That's picks to fill roster spots. And Brett Veach has become very, very good at finding value in the later rounds. You need those spots because you got 28 guys that are impending free agents right now. Some of them are restricted or exclusive rights, so you'll get a good chunk of them back. But Charles Aminihu and Nick Bolton and Trey Smith and Justin Reed and Derek Nnadi, guys that are free agents that may end up somewhere else, you need those draft picks to fill roster spots right now. And if you want to move into the top 15, I think you have to trade off not draft capital. You got to trade off a piece. You got to trade off a big name like a McDuffie or a Chris Jones, and I'm not sure the Chiefs want to do that.
Yeah, I also think Chiefs fans probably won't like this, but considering the options, like I don't think it's completely out of the question that either DJ Humphries is a left tackle, or go back 2 years ago when they brought in Juwan Taylor. Everybody thought he was coming in to be the left tackle. Now, they never gave a single rep to Juwan Taylor, I believe, at left tackle. And so they just said, no, he's our right tackle. They gave him the money, and, you know, he's been average, right? I think he hasn't been as bad as everybody thinks, but he's been fine, and maybe hasn't lived up to the deal, but he's been fine. Can you explore that more? You know, like, can you explore that more? Is it that he didn't want to play left tackle, that you just truly don't think he can play the position? I would be exploring that in the offseason as well. Is it possible that he could be your left tackle and Wanya Morris is your right tackle? And all of a sudden, okay, we've got some stable pieces. We're already paying Juwan Taylor a good chunk of change. Wanya Morris on a rookie deal. I think he can be a right tackle in this league. And Kingsley's your Trey Smith replacement. I don't think fans will love that idea, but I think that might be a realistic option because we both are saying 31, if you're staying there, you're not finding your long-term answer at left tackle. You don't have time to develop that guy. If so, then why not take more time to develop somebody else that's in-house? Or is there another Orlando Brown Jr. type of trade? And you guys recall a couple of years ago when they struck out on Trent Williams, when it looked like they didn't like the draft clearly at the tackle market, which sounds like kind of where this is maybe trending. They found a guy that wanted to play left tackle that was in the final year of his rookie deal, and the Ravens were willing to move on from. I don't know if that guy exists this go around. Like, that's a pretty specific circumstance that has to happen. But if it's not that, even if you go sign a Cam Robinson, I don't think the Chiefs are giving him a long-term deal with his history. Ronnie Stanley, it's a big dice roll on a one-year deal or two-year deal because he played a full season this past year, but that's not been his track record. So I think the options aren't going to be ones that fans on the surface are necessarily going to love unless they pull off a really surprise trade way up in the draft, or they find that Orlando Brown Jr.-ish type of trade from the Ravens a couple years ago.
If left tackle is your biggest need right now, if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, and it is, I would say, at least in my view, it is. Unfortunately, the problem is at 31, you're not going to be able to make it work, and you'd have to give up a lot in order to move up in this draft. With that in mind, other needs begin to rise to the fore. I think you can find a day one starter on the interior of your defensive line in this draft at 31. You could go find another corner at 31 if you wanted to, and that will allow you to push Trent McDuffie back into the slot where I think he is at his best. He's an elite corner, one-on-one as a cover corner, outside or inside, but he's the best slot corner in football. If you put him there, I think that's where he's most comfortable. I think that would be a good fit. If you want to go get another wide receiver, fine. I don't think that that's your most pressing need. Or you could find a tight end, although I think Noah Gray can be the heir apparent. I think he proved that this year. I think there are other needs that you can fill more precisely and accurately at 31 outside of left tackle, because it's a giant hit or miss at left tackle. It's too high risk, high reward in my view.
We'll get back to the Chiefs and also the latest on a report out there in regards to the stadium front for both the Chiefs, and obviously it impacts the Royals in some form or fashion as well. In a little while, it's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon, Logan Weber is in for Cody today. Let's go out to Surprise, Arizona, though, as we continue to check in with our Royals insider, Josh Fernier, throughout spring training. He's got his hot stove show tonight, 6 o'clock here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan, Chris Bubich. Ben Kuderna and Annie Rogers going to be on the show with you, Vern, tonight. I'm not going to ask about the weather again or anything like that. I assume it's gorgeous and perfect and everything like that. But you got a good show lined up tonight, 6 o'clock, right?
Yeah, looking forward to it. Annie's been here since the very beginning, so going to get caught up on anything that the Royals fan may have missed. And then Ben Kuderna, the local product, the Shawnee Mission product, he yesterday squared off with his idol growing up in Salvador Perez. So we'll talk about that. And also him being, what, a year and a half, maybe less, away from the big leagues. And then Chris Bubich, who right now has, I don't want to say taking control of that number five spot in the rotation, but as JJ told you guys earlier in the week, a setback with Kyle Wright, the early spring setback with Alec Marsh has really laid a paved road for Chris Bubich to grab that number five spot. And shoot, I was just mentioning to him earlier today, you go back to that 2023, that the miserable season that it was, the highlight, and we were joking about it, even though he only made 2.5 starts, the highlight of that miserable 2023 was, you know, Chris Bubich and those 2.5 starts that he gave you early on, as it showed you that it was a new day of Royals baseball, that there's a new approach when it comes to pitching and developing pitching. Bubich will get into that and make me sound really dumb with his Stanford education and the big words I'm sure he's going to throw.
That's all right, Vern. I was talking about like the winter mask earlier. That I was wondering why Sporting KC last night at their game weren't wearing like those, and I called them baklava mask instead of the whatever they're called. So it's all right.
That's fine.
You know?
Yeah, I would have known exactly what you were. Yeah, yeah, right. I think that worked.
Yeah.
By the way, I was just watching Seth Lugo throw his live BP, and boy, oh boy. He looks like the same Seth Lugo that was a runner-up for the Cy Young Award last year. Now he's undressing Royals hitters, so that's unfortunate. But this team last year was led by pitching, and if that Lugo shows up on opening day or day two, pitching could lead the way once again. Just abusing dudes out there with his array of pitches. And Salvi, of course, chirping behind the dish, letting everybody know, strike three, go sit down.
I love that. That's a great sign. Now, let me ask you while we're on the starting pitching for a second, Vern, out of that group, maybe it still is Lugo for you. Who would you, this is negative, but who would you be most fearful that has some regression or you know, you deal with injuries, all kinds of stuff like that, that the Royals were very fortunate a year ago?
Yeah, it wouldn't be Lugo, even though number two in the Cy Young led the American League in innings pitched. I mean, okay, some of those numbers might come back down to earth, but his experience, you know, even though that he has, you know, a decade in the big leagues, there's certainly not that type of wear and tear on that right elbow or right shoulder. The guy knows his body very well, and, you know, he steps on the hill and 9-10 pitches. Okay, this isn't working. He just has so many other options. So it wouldn't be Lugo. Waka had the best season he's had since 2017. That, to me, is going to be difficult to duplicate. And then, you know, Cole Reagans, to me, is still ascending, still finding more confidence. So to answer the question, I would say Michael Waka, and I'm assuming we're eliminating Bubich because he wasn't there, Lorenzen because he wasn't there. But, yeah, out of the big three, I would point to the you know, the elder statesman, even though he's not age-wise, innings-wise, years-wise in the big leagues, Michael Waka's the cagey vet. And, yeah, it would be tough for me to imagine him duplicating what he did last year. But you know what? Even if those innings come back because you do have that better bullpen, ERA might be a little bit better for Waka, even if he doesn't log those 170-plus innings.
So staying along the lines of pitching, I want to move over to the bullpen, you know, what that looks like this year. We talked about the rotation. It started off slow last year, but it came on later in the year, especially when you brought in a guy like Lucas Ercig. You signed Carlos Estevez this offseason. What does that bullpen look like with those two guys alongside Sam Long, who had a good year last year? What have you seen from them over the last couple of days here?
Yeah, the return of Hunter Harvey, John Schreiber coming back. You know, Angel Zerpa is going to be in the mix once Alec Marsh is right and ready. You could see him out there. I mean, I love that signing they just brought in yesterday, the non-roster invite of Ross Stripling, who, when you dive into the analytics, his numbers last year were not as bad as the ERA and the win-loss record would show you. But, man, when I look at the bullpen, to me, it's going to allow and I was joking with Q about this, it's going to allow a little bit more debate on the postgame show, because last year it was so easy. Not easy, but it was so obvious. Of course you let Lugo and Waka and Reagans and Singer face the opposition a third time through in April, May, June, July, and August. Now I think we're going to have a little bit more debate, because you're going to have arrested Hunter Harvey or Erceg or Carlos Estevez. There's going to be so many more options. But as far as how they're deployed, I'm normally going to follow the money. Estevez making the most. I think he's going to get the most save opportunities. Lucas Erceg, who I spoke with yesterday, and man, did he benefit from that playoff run last year in learning his body. And, man, just what a toll that extra month takes on a pitcher who hasn't been to October. So a great offseason for Lucas Erceg, as far as he wants to make sure that he's still ascending as we get to August, September, and into October, because he felt in October that he started to nosedive, and he wants to make sure that he's right. So I see him as the fireman. I see Estevez as your closer, and then you know how Q does it. It's all going to be matchup-based, and Lord knows he has plenty of options out there to call upon. You mentioned most of them, and shoot, man, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if along the way a few other names pop up. I mean, Daniel Lynch, haven't even brought him up, but because of the setback that Marsh and Wright and others could befall over the course of the next few weeks here in Arizona, I wouldn't be surprised to see Daniel Lynch coming out of that bullpen as well.
We're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Furnier. He's got his hot stove show tonight, 6 o'clock here on 96.5 The Fan. The other side story throughout spring training that I know I'll be keeping an eye on, and I don't think it's in at every park. You can tell me if the Royals shared park and everything is one of these, but they're going to have these robot umps in spring training. Yeah. What's your thought? I think it's the exact same format virtually of what they did in minor leagues. Isn't that right? So yep. We've kind of seen this, but how do you think that could translate to even spring training?
Well, talking to Q about that earlier today, he's not putting too much emphasis, too much focus on it, because it ends, right? It ends in 4 weeks. We're not going to see it in the regular season. Now, it'll benefit them, as it'll likely be implemented for the 2026 season, but yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. To me, it's always been the best of the available options to help the umpires, right? The pitcher, catcher, hitter, you get a couple seconds to tap your helmet, tap your hat, a lot like tennis. Go up to the board and we'll see exactly where that pitch was. Yeah, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to, rival the pitch clock as far as the legacy of Rob Manfred. To me, it's definitely going to change the game, but it's going to make the game so much more exciting. It's going to make my post-game show a lot better come next year as well, because, Cole Reagans get a little amped up in that first inning when he called for the challenge, right? You got to be strategic about it, and I think that's going to add another layer of intrigue for the fan base.
Oh, I can't wait. I mean, driving home from Kauffman, and they're going to be calling into to your post-game show. People are going to be saying, Vern, how did he not challenge that, man? Or the controversy, did he actually tap his helmet? No, I was just adjusting my helmet. I can just see it now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no question. You're always adjusting something. So, you're going to have to, you're going to have to be pretty, I would imagine, because of the point you bring up, you're going to have to be pretty blatant about it.
Josh Furnier, our Royals insider, will be checking in again tomorrow. We got some actual baseball. Even if it's spring trade, it's going to feel good to hear the crack of the bat tomorrow, 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan.
Big Daniel Lynch on the bump. A lot of the big names going to be in the lineup. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and it's just the beginning.
That's right. There you go. Josh Furnier's got his hot stove show tonight, 6 o'clock here on 96.5 The Fan. We mentioned a couple of the guests, including Chris Bubich, going to join him tonight. Be sure to check that out. And yeah, I really want to see what the – it makes sense if you're Q, like, hey, why are we going to focus on it, the replay stuff this year, because it's not going to be in baseball. But I'm kind of excited just to see what that looks like. I've heard about it in the minors, but I've never actually seen it, so, or heard it on a broadcast, if that makes sense. Like, I've seen some random clips that people will point out, like you tap your – and they quickly show on the Jumbotron, like – it takes 15 seconds, if that, to decide if it should be overturned or not, and then you get your challenge back. But that is definitely where this thing is trending.
Absolutely. It doesn't affect the pace of play all that much. I have been to a couple of minor league games since they implemented the robo umps, working down in Springfield, where the Springfield Cardinals are the St. Louis Cardinals AA affiliate. And I think that it is a step in the right direction. I think that you should not take it much further than where it's at, because you you risk losing the human element. And I know that there's some people that are like, well, it's got to be right all the time. That's not human. We love sports because there's a human element to it. The players playing in it, the coaches coaching in it, the executives, you know, putting the teams together, and the umpires, referees, and officials that are enforcing the games. That's another part of the beauty of sport. I like the fact that in a big situation, bottom of the eighth inning, bases loaded, it's a 2-2 count, ball slightly outside, umpire rings him up, strike three, and the guy's like, no, I want you to take another look at that. Oh, turns out it's a ball, and now we got a full count. In big moments like that, it makes perfect sense. But I like the fact that you're limited on it, right? Because you don't want them to abuse it and be like every single pitch, be like somebody's reviewing this thing and end up having 200 reviews sure. a game. You don't want to see that. But I like the fact that it gives a little bit of control to the umpire and the player to determine, you know, in a given moment, in the biggest moments of the game, what we're doing here. But the umpire is still in control and that human element remains.
The one time a game, because most of the time the umps are actually pretty accurate. I know we all think they stink, but most of the time they're actually really, really accurate in balls and strikes. But there's also a clip once a week or so where one is like way out of the zone. It's called a strike. You're just like, did you blink? Did you not see? It solves that. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, you're right, there's the strategy, but let's say it's in the World Series and there's just a big punch out to end the game and you've got a challenge left, so you're just going to challenge it. Does it make it anticlimactic a little bit? Like if you're going to have a pause in the action, what would be the final strikeout of a game? And you're like, well, no, hold on. You can't celebrate yet. Like that's the only part that I would wonder if that becomes a little bit of an issue. But in general, I do like the idea. Up next, though, we'll get to the latest from Diana Rossini, the future of Travis Kelce. She's got some new insight on that. We'll also work in the random question of the day here on Cody and Gold.